Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, December 23rd. I'm Ray Graff. Today we welcome back our friend Catherine Sheehan, Executive Director of the Hart Clewitt Museum and the Rensselaer County and Troy City Historian, a native of Troy. Kathy has lectured on local history topics, including Uncle Sam, the man and the legend, the Underground Railroad, public health, women's suffrage, agriculture, the changing landscape of the county. Today, we'll look back at holiday stories of our region. Do you have one to share? Maybe Uncle Sam came down your chimney with a Red Ryder musket gun or something. 800-348-2551 is the number. If you want to talk history with Kathy Sheehan, 800-348-2551 or email voxpop@wamc.org. We'll talk history right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us again today is Catherine Sheehan. Catherine is the executive director of the Hart Clewitt Museum and the Rensselaer County and Troy City Historian. A native of Troy, New York, Kathy's career at the museum began when she was an intern from the public history program at SUNY Albany. She is the author of a publication which we talk about a lot, and she took her longer to finish than, building the pyramids. But I think it's done. No, it's not done? All right, forget it. I'm not even going to announce it then. Catherine has lectured on many local history topics and has been an advisor for HBO's The Gilded Age. She is a great guest on this program. And the Hart Clewitt Museum is a thing of beauty. It's always great to have Kathy Sheehan back on the show. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551 if you want to join in as we roll along, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Kathy Sheehan, when are you going to finish that thing?
Oh, this year it has to be done because we are coming up on our 100th anniversary in 2027. So this is my 2026. I have to get it done and printed and published and all that good stuff. So we all New Year's resolutions coming up. Yeah. That's like I have to get it wrapped up.
I checked the betting line in Vegas, and the odds are pretty high at this point.
It has to be done.
Okay, fair enough.
It will be done.
So what is new, Kathy Sheehan?
Well, we just wrapped up our big annual holiday green show at the Hart Clewitt Museum.
It
was fabulous. Yeah. We had almost 1,500 people.
Fantastic.
Which is great. And the ladies of the Van Rensselaer Garden Club, shout out to them. We did movies this year as the theme. So you could still drive up Second Street and you'll see Clark Griswold hanging up the lights out in front and everything. It was a lot of fun. And it's like the Macy's Day Parade, though. We already start planning for next year.
Wow, that's amazing. Don't you ever take any time off?
We're closed between Christmas and New Year, so our hard-earned staff gets a break.
Kick up your feet,
maybe put
the game on and stuff. By the way, if listeners can't get enough, Catherine Sheehan, we are replaying on Friday. This is my last show until Monday.
Okay.
So I'm taking Friday after Christmas off, and we're going to replay the antiques appraisal show from the Hart Clewitt Museum on Friday at this time.
Oh, great.
So you get a whole lot of Kathy Sheehan this week.
And everybody else. Stair galleries.
And they're all booked for next year, as are you. So it's going to be a great year here on Vox Pop. And it's been a fun year so far, although in the world, I would classify this as kind of a weird year, don't you think?
It's been a little strange, but, we've had other years like that, so.
In the course of your looking back at all these years gone by, what's the weirdest year you can remember?
Wow. Literally in my own memory? Or
No. In your historical research.
Oh, my gosh. I'd certainly say the 60s. My favorite period is actually the Cold War period, that post-World War II period when we were, everybody's making bomb shelters in their backyard. I just found a plan with our archives.
We have.
Yeah, yeah. Architect drawings for a bomb shelter.
One of my colleagues in the newsroom bought a house in Albany. Mm-hmm. They have one.
Wow.
It was there. I mean, it was built in.
Yeah. Oh no, a lot of people did it. Yeah, they were. It was quite the thing. So I find those kind of periods fascinating myself. So.
Kathy Sheehan's our guest today, Executive Director of the Hart Clewitt Museum and Rensselaer County and Troy City Historian. Our kind of loose theme for today is holiday history.
Holidays.
And things that have gone on here in years past.
Yeah. We had I was, you and I were talking about this. I said, well, heck, we are 2 days before Christmas here. And why not? And actually, 202 years ago today,
right,
the poem, A Night Before Christmas, A Night Before Christmas,
sure,
All Through the House. The authorship has been somewhat contested over the year, but for most people, I think they think it's Clement Clark Moore.
And it's not.
And I agree. I agreed with that, but it was challenged. Henry Livingston, down near the Claremont area, down below us in Columbia County, they had a man by the name of Don Foster wrote a book several years ago challenging the authorship of that poem.
On what grounds?
On that Moore stole it from Henry Livingston. Henry Livingston wrote this back in the late 1700s. It's an interesting read.
Is there any evidence for
well,
this?
No. Frankly, there's no real evidence one way or the other. And honestly, I know it's just weird to say, I don't really care. Because
wow.
the only thing
have you
that,
been nipping at the eggnog?
Not yet.
All right, fine.
No, but what no one has disputed, this is where my point comes in, is that it was first published to the world in the Troy Sentinel newspaper on December the 23rd of 1823.
That is pretty amazing.
Which is pretty amazing.
Yeah. Do you have that newspaper?
We our colleagues at the Troy Public Library have the actual newspaper from 1823. We have it just a couple years later. We have copies because it was published, as it still is, every single year. And the Times Union now publishes it, but the Troy Record did it for many years before that. But what was fun about Don Foster, this is years ago when he wrote this, he called me and he said, well, here's what I think. I said, well, okay, this is an interesting story. Send me your, where's your proof? And while he went back and forth, this disappeared and that disappeared, he did send me this wonderful letter that was in the collection of the Museum of the City of New York. And it was a letter written by Orville Luther Holly, who was the editor of the paper. And in it, he was saying how he acquired this poem. Now, in the published histories of the Troy paper, the Weiss's History of City of Troy, and they always say that it was this little Harriet Butler, was friends of Clement Clark Moore's family. Her father was an Episcopal minister in Troy, and they went to the Chelsea, which is down the city where the Moore family lived. Reads the poem. She liked it so much. She said, could I bring it back to my Sunday school class? And so Clement Clark Moore agreed. And then it says and Harriet brought this paper over to the Troy Sentinel. Well, there's something in the back of that always kind of made me, it's like, no little girls in the 1820s walk into an editor's office. Yeah. Well, as it turned out, when you start digging in, this letter that Don Foster sent was great because it actually said it was a Mrs. Daniel Sackett who brought the letter over. I was like, well, who was she? So now you got to do the digging.
Yeah.
She was a Sunday school teacher in Troy.
Ah.
And so it was an adult woman. And then as it turns out, we, dig a little more about Harriet Butler. She's a little older than was first, mentioned. So this is where this whole thing's, with myth and things like that come out. But the other part of this story that I think is interesting with the poem, and we all have these images now. Think of how many published books there are about The Night Before Christmas. I mean, they've been going on for years.
Yeah.
But the first real image that we see of Santa Claus going over the rooftops was actually, again, published in the Troy Sentinel newspaper around 1830. There was a man by the name of Myron King. And Myron King was an engraver. And he made a name for himself in Troy because he actually did a badge, a silk badge, for Lafayette's Grand Tour, 1824 and 25. And he ends up doing this woodcut. And you see this little Santa Claus in the sleigh and the reindeer going over the rooftops, and you see the smoke and everything like that. And it's the first real time we really create this image. And people always ask me, what would be the most wonderful thing to come walking in the door of the museum? And I say, the woodcut.
Do you know where it is?
No, nobody knows.
Do you think it still exists?
I'd be thrilled. I doubt it. They would use woodcuts. Woodcuts are, in the printing business, it's tough to use it multiple times before, everything gets too
Right. Edited
out. So they probably threw it out. But so you look at the early 1830 papers and things, and there is now they've got the poem with the woodcut in there. So I always thought that was pretty cool. And of course, Thomas Nast is the one who gives us the, you know, the jollier kind of Santa Claus image, who also gave us one of those early images of Uncle Sam.
Interesting. Yeah. And kind of a different look for Uncle Sam as well.
And a different look for Uncle Sam.
The number here is 800-348-2551. It's History Today with Kathy Sheehan from the Hart Clewitt Museum and Rensselaer County and Troy City historian. 800-348-2551. I was thinking the other day about what it was like around here in the late 1600s when it was crawling with Dutch. Were the Dutch a jovial and happy bunch at Christmas time, you think?
I think there was. But again, our friends over at the New York State Library, they come with the Sinterklaas, S-I-N-T-E-R-K-L-A-S-S. And in the Van Rensselaer Manor papers, which are over there in the archives, they actually find images about or notations about Maria Van Rensselaer setting aside money to purchase Sinterklaas treats for holiday celebrations. Our friends at the Crailo State Historic Site, just across the river in the city of Rensselaer, they pay homage to this holiday. They have the annual St. Nicholas Day that they did in early December. So a shout out. So the Dutch, and then you have who's got early history? Washington Irving, Clement Clark Moore. They all have Dutch heritage. So that's very much brings into the fold.
You know, we have kind of music on in the house, Christmas music on, and it's on a cable channel, and we just turn the TV screen off and let it play like a radio, and. Before I turned the screen off the other day, there was a little tidbit. I don't know if this is true, but the first Christmas tree in England was Queen Victoria.
Yeah, tabletop.
And I wonder, once the Brits took over here, what it was like. I mean, again, was it not a big deal?
No. I mean, nothing. It's nothing like we think about our Christmas stuff now. It was very subdued. It's a religious holiday.
Yeah.
You know, but you did these little packages and things like that, you know, and everybody has these small traditions. I think it's great that you brought up the Christmas tree because, of course, this year, this area got a big shout out because the Christmas tree at Rockefeller Center came from East Greenbush, the Russ family, in memory of Dan Russ, who had passed away. 75-foot Norway spruce.
Beautiful
tree.
But they didn't make any money on this.
But now, this is great. When you look at, I said, this is great because we go back to the first American Christmas tree. Now, we're probably going to get, there's somebody who's going to challenge this.
Good. I want to hear the shit.
First American was actually credited to a Hessian soldier named Hendrik Rodmore, R-O-D-D-M-O-R-E, who was captured, believe it or not, at the Battle of Bennington. Oh. Well, I'll tell you, all roads lead to Rensselaer County.
Isn't that amazing?
In 1776, he then went on to a farm in Windsor Locks, Connecticut, and worked for this Denslow family, and he decorated a tree. So they go back that far.
Wow.
But then we have, we all know about the, pretty much, I think that's pretty much established that first Christmas tree lot. Was established in 1851 by a Pennsylvania man named Mark Carr. He hauled sleds of trees down from the Catskills and brought them to New York City to sell our Catskills. Yeah, to sell them in New York City.
That's a long trek.
Long trek from Pennsylvania up to the Catskills and then back down to New York City.
I'm going to pause you there. We got to take a break. We're overdue here. 800-348-2551 is our number. Kathy Sheehan at History, Holiday History Today, or whatever you want to talk about. 800-348-2551. Cyrus Chestnut and friends doing the old classic from Peanuts, Skating here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's History with Kathy Sheehan today. And Laura writes in, I met Catherine at an event called A Drinking History of the Barns at Nipmoose. Ask her about that. Also excited she'll be giving a presentation at the Johnstown Public Library soon.
I am. I'm excited.
So what's with the drinking history, and why haven't we done that for a topic yet?
I tell you, you can put that on the road. We, that started a little bit before COVID, we were just, you know, how can we do a fun way of getting history's fun?
Yeah.
So we went to local bars and I basically picked a topic and people got a drink, a specialty drink from whatever bar we were at. And we talked about history stuff.
Well, if you had a designated driver, I mean.
Yeah, well, yeah.
All right, fair enough. The number here is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Before we get to our phones, let's continue to delve into this history. I cut you off before the break.
Oh, that's all right. Well, I had another tree story before we move on to other.
Oh, but just let me ask again.
Oh, yeah.
Did they put these trees on barges and take them down the Hudson?
He claims he put them on a sled. I mean, that's the story.
That's crazy talk.
It's crazy talk.
Take days and days.
Right, 1850. Right. You're thinking, what are you going down? This would be Route 9?
The needles would be falling off.
Right, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, they even now they take trees down and harvest them in October and
yeah.
stuff. Wrap it all up. It's crazy if yep. you think you're getting a real fresh tree and a lot.
Ours is still drinking.
Oh, that's great.
You know, yeah. last year, not so much. Last yeah. year, the guy at the counter said, all right, you got to put this little drops of this little fluid in there, in your water, and it's going to make your tree extra verdant and lush. The thing dried up in like a week, and by Christmas, everything was coming down.
It looked like a Charlie Brown tree.
Yeah, this year it's good. Yeah. All right, so anyway, go ahead.
So what other trees? So, well, the again, that has to do with this area. You know, the first national Christmas tree lighting at the White House was in 1923 during President Calvin Coolidge, who, of course, was from the state of Vermont, our neighbors, and in the WAMC listening area, and a Schenectady GE executive named Frederick Morris Feiker, F-E-I-K-E-R, so I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. He was in his early years at GE, and he suggested the idea to President Coolidge. The tree came in with, if I just want to check my notes here, came from the Batal Forest near Middlebury.
Okay.
And it was strung with 3,000 electric lights strung on GE wires. And, yeah. And
okay.
And, yeah.
I'm amazed that, Calvin Coolidge didn't burn the White House down, all right? Those old incandescent lights.
Hot.
I can imagine how hot they would be in 1923. Yeah. I remember seeing singe marks from the old incandescent ones
yeah.
back in the day.
Yeah, the bubble lights. We had the really cool bubble lights.
Yeah.
I know, yeah, you can't do those anymore.
So that's very interesting. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah, but along with Schenectady, since we're our neighbors to the west, we've all looked at it, and actually it was in the paper. You know, people have been going, wait a minute, the GE sign is supposed to be red and green for Christmas. And
Yes.
As kids, we would drive over every year to go see the GE sign.
I remember that.
Right, for Christmas, which actually they've been changing the colors in that since around 1951. The sign was first put up in 1926 on Building 37, which was the GE Research Laboratory. And it actually has almost 1,400 bulbs in that thing.
I bet.
Yeah, $13.99. So apparently they're doing restoration on it. So to get back to
that is why
point to doing, that's why it is staying lit just white lights this year. But it will be back again.
Catherine Sheehan's our guest today, Executive Director of the Hart Clewitt Museum. It's history on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Laura writes in, over the weekend, I attended Glimmer Nights at Fenimore Farms. In the Bump Tavern, an employee pointed out a feather tree from Victorian times in which the people twisted feathers to form a Christmas tree. Are you familiar with this?
Yes, we have one in the collection.
Really?
Yeah.
So this was a thing in the Victorian times.
Yep.
I'm having trouble visualizing this.
It's very, very thin. The branches, big spaces between the branches. And again, it looks... And if you look at kind of early images, even with the ones with Queen Victoria, even though it's a regular tree, it's very feathery looking. But yeah, that was the thing. And then you had these beautiful, I mean, the Germans did gorgeous glass bulbs, ornaments. And, you know, you put all these wonderful little, you know, and tinsel, you know.
Yeah.
Again, yeah, they get the prize for all those gorgeous, really beautiful ornaments and
you
stuff.
You know, and I have no idea if this is true or not, but another little factoid I saw is that tinsel is based on a very old story that a spider once spun a web on a tree and it turned to silver.
Yeah, Spider. Yeah, there's a great children's book, The Spider Web, Cobweb Christmas.
And how old is that story, though?
I think some of it goes back to the
olden times.
Folklore and time. Yeah, at least, yeah.
The number here is 800-348-2551. What would a Catherine Sheehan appearance be without a chat from our friend Joan in Schenectady? Joan, welcome.
And thank you, Ray. I would wish you a more happy holidays, but I think we covered that in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah,
but
we
how
did.
About, hey, Kathy Sheehan, happy holidays.
Oh, happy holidays, Joan. It's so good to hear from you.
And thank you. Hey, I have a question, but you guys were talking about such very interesting things. Let me see how I numbered them. One, the night before Christmas was a family tradition. We had, it was kind of like Collier's fairy folk tales and fairy tales. The pictures in that book sounded so much like what you were just describing in black and white, even though ours were in color.
Uh-huh.
And you should have seen the eight children. All like getting ready for all of our favorite parts, as my dad read it every year.
Yep. That's great.
It was fantastic.
I know. I always love thinking about all the people that are reading that story every Christmas Eve.
I still have to.
We do too.
But thankfully, the last year or two, I've been not having to put the Santa suit on, which I found a little annoying for years. But anyway, go ahead, Joan.
Oh, dear. And you were talking about the Santa Claus stuff from the Dutch. Mm-hmm. Heritage. We have no trace of Dutch heritage that I'm aware of, so it must have just been that we were raised in Schenectady. But every time, I think it was December 5th, one shoe went in the open foyer, and the next morning we had gold-wrapped coins.
Wow.
So now I know where that comes from.
Oh, sure. Yeah, the little Dutch shoes, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, and of course, Schenectady, you do have a lot. I mean, my gosh, the Dutch all settled
Dutch,
over in there, too.
Sure.
Yeah. This whole area.
Yeah, I don't know how my family just decided, another excuse to give them candy.
Yes.
It's a good Santa.
And I love the whole GE red and green. Oh, my gosh, ever since I was a child, we would look at that. Okay.
Isn't that nice?
So now here's my question while we're on Christmas.
Okay.
I'm so fond of all the canals and especially the buried waterways.
Okay.
All around this area. Albany, I think, is under Lincoln Park even. And Troy, of course. Did they use canals and other waterways for their celebrations, maybe lit up boats or whatever?
Well, they would have. I mean, the canals were closed, so I'm sure there was probably people skating on them.
I'm having
the Hans Brinker images running through my mind. I'm sure they do. Now, I know. Like up in Ottawa, up in Canada, the Rideau Canal, that's like a huge thing where people are skating. I'm not sure how much that is really allowed on the Barge Canal. Maybe some of the offshoots that are from the original canal that are still intact as you go out through the Mohawk Valley, they may do a little of that. But that's still kind of fluid water. So,
yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Interesting. Great question.
I just thought about it.
Hey,
thank you so much.
I don't think I'm going to talk to you before Christmas, so have a happy holiday, and we'll see you next week, yeah?
You're welcome. See you soon. Bye.
Take care, Joan.
Appreciate it. Let's go to Liberty. Monica, you're on with Kathy Sheehan.
Hi. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. How are you? It's good to hear your voice.
I'm okay. I am from the Caribbean. I grew up in the Caribbean, and Christmas Eve was the day we started to decorate everything. Anyway, as a child, I always heard about 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. You know that poem?
Yeah.
'Twas the Night Before Christmas, went all through the house. I just recently learned that the author of that poem was born in Poughkeepsie in 1748.
Aha!
And his name is Henry Livingston Jr.
Oh, that's so funny.
When I looked him up, I saw that instead of just America, it was called British America, the province of New York, and in British America, I guess, with the history of, before the Civil War, etc. But can you put some validity to that it was written by a local in the, upstate area?
It's so funny, Monica, that you bring this up because you missed the beginning of the show because Kathy and I were talking about just this, and so Kathy, why don't you give us a recapitulation?
Quick recap. Yeah. So it's always been assumed that Clement Clark Moore, and I think you if you were to take a poll, I think probably 80% of the people would still say it's Clement Clark Moore. But there was a challenge about 15, 20 years ago about that Henry Livingston actually wrote it, and that Moore stole it. There's really honestly no, you know, there's nothing extant, really proof positive, to say that, that Henry Livingston wrote it. There's not a part of the poem. Clement Clark Moore did around 1847 say that he did write it, you know, because for a while it was anonymous. When it was first published in the Troy Sentinel newspaper in 1823, it was an anonymous author. And then by 1837, people were saying, yes, it was actually Clement Clark Moore. It took another 10 years for him to actually say that, yes, he did it. And then he rewrote the poem. And that's what the, and there's you can find all sorts of podcasts. As a matter of fact, and I can't think what the name of the person is that does that. But there's all sorts of podcasts and things about, you know, who really did write it.
So there is some controversy. Some people think that it's Livingston.
Some people think it's Livingston.
Okay.
And other people think it's Clement Clark Moore. We did a mock trial about 10 years ago and at the Rensselaer County Courthouse with Judge Spain and everything. It was great. Easter Jones was standing up for the Moore family and Jack Casey stood up for the Livingston.
Oh, that's amazing.
And then we did a retrial.
Monica, I just got to know, how did you find out about this? Who told you this? And you don't have to say a name, but
I wrote a poem with the same meter, the same idea of Christmas Eve, but of course in Caribbean language. And I wanted to get some information as to who was the first person to have written that poem. And so if I may just say the first verse of where I changed it up for Caribbean culture, it was the day before Christmas. Mama woke up all in the house to scrub and clean everything, even case of the mouse. The mahogany cabinet polished till it shone, and the china plates and glasses all sparkled just fine.
I love it, Monica. That's awesome.
That's great.
Well, have a lovely holiday, and thank you for the call. It's 800-348-2551 for Kathy Sheehan here on a history edition of Vox Pop. You can email us as well. VoxPop@WAMC.org. I am so now, I didn't know that there was a controversy.
Yeah.
And so now I'm really interested in this.
Yeah. You got to go digging.
What year did they say that Livingston wrote it? Those who believe it?
Oh, like the late 1700s.
So
like,
about 35
years before, yeah.
Is there any inkling, any evidence that school children or others were reciting this poem before Moore released it?
No. Because that's the beauty of what we found is that there was no published poem. It was only had been said, you know, within a family context that it was read around, you know, table until it was published in Troy.
So as a historian, how do you continue to dig if there's evidence, it's just sort of mouth.
That's by mouth, right. Oral history.
Yeah.
Right. You know, although you've got Luther Holly, that letter I told you about earlier, you know, he says that it was, you know, Mrs. Hackett who got it from Mr. Moore. And the fact that the Moores and the Butlers and, they all knew each other, you know, gives a little more credence, I think, to Clement Clark Moore.
But we don't know.
We don't know.
Where he got it from. Maybe he stole it.
You're skeptical. I have enough skepticism.
All right. Well, you have to be in your line of work.
In the end, I still honestly don't care because nobody's disputed our end of it.
All right, fine. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's History Today with Kathy Sheehan, who is executive director of the Hart Clewitt Museum and Rensselaer County and Troy City historian. We'll be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. It's History Today with Catherine Sheehan. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We're talking a little bit about sort of the history of the holidays here around these parts. Let's go to Ellen and Troy. Ellen, you're on.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Welcome.
You know me, right?
Sure. Yeah, from the Fun Drive. How you doing?
Hi, Ellen.
Good. Okay, so a couple of things. I was writing them on any piece of paper I could find in the car and then ran upstairs.
Okay.
So there's an institution. I grew up in New Jersey called McCullough Hall, which is very much the complexion of the Lansingburg Library. It was a boys' school. They're big on history, and they may know something more about your woodcut, possibly. That's in Morristown, New Jersey. I don't know if you know McCullough Hall.
I don't, but I know Morristown. I'll have to go down there. Okay, my brother lives not too far from there.
That might yield something. I'd be happy to help you on it.
Oh, great.
Also,
thanks.
In Vermont, there's I'm just mentioning this, in Arlington, the Canfield Pines, the Canfield family was very famous in Arlington. And if you want to take a little day trip, the pines, you have to find them on this road. But if you ask locally, they'll help you find it. And they use them like for the tall ships.
Yes.
Historically. And that's a really amazing thing. Wait, I have a few notes here.
Okay.
Also, I know that I think Joe interviewed Brad Kessler, and he wrote the most wonderful book called The Woodcutter's Christmas.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I like his work very much, but that is an absolutely touching and beautiful story to read at Christmas time.
All right.
And last, I'm putting a plug in for my friend Tim James. He moved his entire operation to Troy. He has a bindery. I'm sure you know it.
I've been there.
Right?
Yes.
Terrific.
It's fabulous.
Amazing. And he gives tours, and he is a very jovial, wonderful person. And he knows more about binding. It's like going back in time. And his place was the first keep for the fire and hose company. I guess that's the way you would put it.
Yeah, it was a hose
and
building.
And he's
right?
got okay. equipment there that's unbelievable. And he's I can give a number.
Well, no, I think
we'll,
I don't think we should do that over
online.
The air. But
yeah.
Ellen, thanks.
Okay, so it's under Renaissance Bindery.
Okay.
And that great. Is extremely worthwhile. And happy holidays. This and is great.
To
Thank
you, too. Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. That's our number. I gather you know Ellen?
I do. Yes.
A denizen of your neck of the woods?
I think she's been down for things before. I knew her voice sounded familiar to me. So, but yeah, the bindery is very cool.
What do we not cover on about the holidays?
Oh, my gosh. So we have more. Jingle bells. Let's
Jingle bells.
Let's go to music.
Yeah.
James, there's a link to Troy. So the author of Jingle Bells is James Lord Pierpont.
Right.
Who was born 1822 to 1893. And your song was originally titled A One Horse Open Sleigh.
Okay, sure.
And it was published in 1857. Now, the link to Troy is he lived in Troy. His father was a minister at the Unitarian Church. He actually lived about two blocks south of where I lived, down on Washington Park, married a Troy girl. But then he was kind of all over the place. So, you know, they say that where he we will take a little bit of credit for it. But Medford, Massachusetts is taking the most of the claim. It's when he was living in Medford that he was inspired by watching the sleigh bells going and the sleigh bells ringing to publish A One Horse Open Sleigh.
Huh.
But closer to home, we have, you know, the song, I'll Be Home for Christmas.
Oh, you have a lovely voice.
Thank you. And that was written up in Greenwich, New York.
Ah,
yeah,
really?
Right. I know. James Kimball Gannon of Greenwich. He wrote he wrote the music with Walter Kent and another lyricist, Buck Ram. And, of course, who sang that in 1943 but Big Crosby? He had that Crooners. Yes, it's a Greenwich right
How
here.
About that?
I know.
Did they make a lot of money on that in those days?
Was I don't
publishing
know, but, you know,
a big
he also,
deal?
He went to St. Lawrence, and then he went to Albany Law School. He was a lawyer.
Huh.
And he used to do some crooning on one of the radio stations, WGY. You know?
No kidding.
Yeah. Yeah.
In what era was that?
GY 1940. Goes, so 43. Yeah. 43, I'll Be Home for Christmas came out, actually beat out White Christmas.
Really?
As far as selling more records that year.
Oh, I'll be darned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know.
That's
very
interesting.
Cool.
Yeah, so you're a font of knowledge.
Hey, you know, you just keep going along. going further back, I think it was my head on music, but and this again, there's controversy over who had the first Christmas card.
Oh, probably Ellen, who just called in a little while
ago.
She
probably did. 1842 merchant from Albany was Richard H. Pease, P-E-A-S-E, and he used a woodcut image of Santa Claus to advertise his variety store. That was in Albany.
Do we have an image of that?
The Albany Institute of History and Art.
Yeah.
They have one. Okay. It was printed in the Albany Evening Journal around 1849 and 50. And then he printed the first Christmas card in America, which showed a lithograph of people surrounded by holiday gifts, food and drink, and they have one.
You know, I was doing the coin and stamp show. Let me see this. Okay, this is not the one that they showed me. Bob Scott, who is from England.
Yes.
No, this is not the one that... Boy, that Santa looks a little evil on this one, I'll tell you that.
Well, but look at it. It's that elfish look.
Yeah.
And it actually, that looks closer to like Byron King's version of Santa Claus from that back in the 1823
Terrifying.
Woodcut. Terrifying, right?
Now, Bob Scott had some sort of an image of what he said was the first Christmas card, and it had people drinking, a group of people drinking around a table, and what he pointed out was there were little kids guzzling.
Yes, I heard him talking
about
that.
Yeah, it was just the funniest thing to see. All right, let's go back to our phones here. 800-348-2551. Rich is in Rensselaer. Rich.
Hi, yes. So we're commemorating General Knox transporting the cannons from Fort Ticonderoga, and I was wondering why would he do it on the west? It seems much flatter on the east of Lake George and the Hudson Valley.
I had that same question. And, of course, we will be, just a shameless plug, January 3rd, we will be at Cralo State Historic Site. And for crossing the Knox Trail, the sledges will be where they came across the river. And actually, one of the cannons fell into the river doing that. We're not reenacting that part.
But you got that out. Somebody got that out.
Yeah, it took them 2 days to get out of the river.
Wow.
And so we'll be celebrating that at Cralo State Historic Site on January 3rd. So be sure to come down to that. I had that same question because it would have been easier. Now, I know they had problems coming across the river, you know, with the Hudson, again, swift water.
Yeah.
And farther up the river, they lost a couple of cannons up near Waterford. Matter of fact, just last week, they had a reenactment of them bringing the sledges down from Saratoga County into Waterford and then over to Peoples Island, over to Schuyler Mansion.
Yeah.
And so it's been a really interesting, fun journey. I'm sorry?
Was it frozen when they reenacted
it? No, it wasn't. No, the river still hasn't frozen. It's a very thin layer of ice. But no, they put them on the sledges that these kids from the Saratoga and Warren and Washington County's BOCES program actually built using 18th century tools and amazing.
What's a sledge?
It's like a sled. But you know,
with
you got to carry these. And
it
would have been pulled. Well, they did put wheels on it for purposes of reenactment. But you can't see them.
So they dragged this thing with no wheels.
No wheels.
That's insane.
It's insane.
They had wheels in those days, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. But no, they were using the ice. They were coming down through Lake George and putting them on the boats and then coming basically kind of following Route 9 more or less.
So you don't really have an answer for Rich about why.
No, I don't. But I hit the same question at Rich done. And maybe only because the roads were more established over on the west side, but they used Lake Champlain, they used Lake George, but they didn't keep them on the boats coming down the Hudson, so they did come overland.
Rich, thanks a lot for the call. Happy holidays to you. 800-348-2551. Catherine Sheehan is here, Executive Director of the Hart Clewitt Museum and the Rensselaer County and Troy City Historian. Corliss writes in, clutters and pier points in Lake Luzerne. Clewitts, I believe.
Oh,
okay,
Clewitts.
Yeah, autocorrect, I'm sure, on his phone.
Oh, Peabody.
The Clewitts had a summer home in Lake Luzerne. I remember Heidi Clewitt. Near the Clewitts summer home, you will W Pierpoint Road. Any connection?
I do not know if there's any connection to the
Pierpont,
to the Pierpont. Yes, yeah. to James Pierpont that wrote that. Okay. I don't know that.
And
we'll have to go digging that.
Listen, if you can, when you send emails to the program, just give it a quick check and see. You know, sometimes. All right, Corliss wrote back. I meant to type Kluets and Pierpont's. All right, buddy, that's okay. 800-348-2551. Catherine Sheehan is here. All right, so what else you got?
Well, you were talking about Bob Scott, and we were talking about Christmas stamps. First, we were talking about how expensive it is to mail Christmas cards.
Yeah.
But the first Christmas stamp issued by the U.S. Post Office was in 1962, and it was issued in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and it featured a wreath and two candles, and it sold for 4 cents.
Yeah.
And they initially printed 350 million stamps, which sold out really quickly.
Right.
So obviously people really liked having our Christmas things going on. Our WAMC listening audience on the other side of the border over in just Massachusetts in Stockbridge, Stockbridge Main Street, we all have heard of Norman Rockwell, famous wonderful illustrator, did that beautiful Main Street scene of Stockbridge at Christmas, was really capturing imagination. Did it in 1967, which was later than I had originally thought. I kept thinking I thought it was like a post-World War II thing, which he did. Somebody, of course, think of the Four Freedoms and some of the other paintings that he did.
Sure.
But yeah, this was later. And he did it from Kohl's magazine.
Yeah.
And for over 30 years now, they have recreated that scene. If you go over to Stockbridge on Main Street. So, I mean, it's just kind of all the fun things that are around to do that. And that print has been sold by the thousands.
Yeah.
I mean, we could talk to our friends at the Stair Galleries. How many prints of Rockwell's, Main Street, show up.
That's the time when they say, well, listen, I hate to tell you, it's not worth that much.
It's not worth that much, right? Yeah. Thousands and thousands of them.
The number here is 800-348-2551. It's Kathy Sheehan, and it's History Today. And it's always fun to have you on the show because I always learn something I never even knew that I didn't know.
That's the fun part of history. Yeah.
Do you ever get bored?
Never.
No.
No. My brother-in-law just asked me that the other day. He goes, "Are you still having fun with this?" And I said, "I really am."
I mean,
I can't imagine not doing this.
You've been at this game a long time.
Yeah. Almost 40. I'm going into my 40th year.
And so to do something that you love is amazing, to do something you don't love, not so amazing.
That's so amazing.
Well, we have a few minutes here left, and I got a couple of calls here we're racked up with. 800-348-2551. Let's see. Ed is. Oh, there we go. Let's go to Mark in Russell, Massachusetts. Mark, you're on.
Hi. I live in Russell, Massachusetts on General Knox Road. It goes through the hills quite a bit, very curvy, up and down, kind of route. And I just wanted to find out if there's any way of knowing if General Knox, came by the house at any time.
He may have. Now, Massachusetts has a full run of Knox Trail events. Ours is going to be January 3rd, and I think mid-January they're going to be crossing into Columbia County, and then it goes over to Massachusetts, and they have all you have to do is do Knox Trail, Massachusetts, and they right over to Dorchester Heights, where those cannons ended up. For George Washington, that he paid him $1,000 to do that trick that took like 6 weeks.
6 weeks
yeah,
to get from.
6 weeks from Fort Ticonderoga over to Dorchester
Heights.
It's a long trip. And you're right. You're over there in the mountains in Massachusetts. It's mind-boggling to think that they dragged those thousands of pounds of cannons and all the different people, of course, that helped along the way, providing, the oxen and horses and draft horses and things like that they used.
And as we get to the 250th birthday of the country, this just puts it in perspective, the dedication, the zeal. I mean, can you imagine asking anybody, we want you to drag these down from the Adirondacks all the way? Right. It's amazing.
Yeah. And what I always thought was interesting, and I think you and I have talked about this a little before, is that you look at some of these images of all these of people who were involved in the American Revolution. They weren't old. We see all these patriots. Henry Knox was only 25 years old. And he was, he was a bookseller. He was over in Boston. But he had a very interest in military history, and that's something in him sparked George to say, "You do it. You go."
Yeah.
And I thought they were saying, "Yeah, it'll only take a couple of weeks."
Right. Hey, Mark, thanks a lot. Appreciate the call. All right, now Catherine Sheehan, Kathy Sheehan. I'll call you Kathy.
You call me Kathy.
Once Mayor Sheehan is moving on to the private sector, I think I can call you Kathy a lot more comfortably.
Exactly.
So what do you have coming up at the Hart Clewitt? And let's do a little shameless promotion.
A little shameless promotion. Well, we are as I said, we're closed between Christmas and New Year's, but staff comes back in January, and we start taking down our exhibitions, and we get ready for our new, again, this is for America 250.
Yeah.
We're doing the peoples of Rensselaer County. So we're looking at, you know, who are the people from Rensselaer County? How they get here? How long did they stay? What kind of impact did they have on the growth of Rensselaer County? You know,
how do you do a deep dive all these years later?
You do a deep dive. You just keep doing a deep dive. Well, we have incredible collections. Like when you were over, it's so much fun. I didn't even take you up to show you the rest of the archives. So that's what we've been doing actually the past few months, is doing all the background research for this exhibition. So now the fun part starts, to get the objects, and we're trying to also do. We'll be doing some real literary public history days where we're going to ask people, what did you bring? You know, so we're looking at, you know, new, not just back in the, you know, 19th century, you know, who's here, like the Armenians when they came in 1914. Talk about DeFazio's. Look at the Italian immigrants that came in, the newer immigration populations that came in. What did they have? What did you bring with you? You know, what was so important that you hung on to this so tightly? And that's part of some of this exhibition that we're doing. So that's going to be a lot of fun.
So, I mean, You're obviously brilliant and you know a lot of things, but what have you learned? You're in this to learn stuff. So what have you learned?
I've learned, some of the early stuff that's been interesting is how much geography is influential in how people stayed. You know, you needed to be around water.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have grist mills and things like that.
Right.
And then, again, some of the other, you know, we've been talking a lot about the Dutch and the Hessian soldiers. These people stayed after the Revolution.
You know, I find that interesting. These were mercenaries.
Right.
And they were paid by the other side.
Uh-huh.
And they were still allowed and welcomed in.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah, because when the war got done, a lot of people said, okay, we're done. During the American Revolution, there were people here that were fighting against each other. New York actually had a very strong Tory connection. I know we all like to think it was all patriots, but there wasn't. There were a lot of connections to England. Not everybody wanted that. Well, and that's been fun to dig into those stories.
And we'll find out more by going to your website, which is where?
HartCluett.org. HartCluett.org.
Kathy Sheehan, it's so much fun always.
Thank you.
And have a lovely holiday, and we'll see you next year.
Yeah, you have a great holiday too. Thank you so much.
And if you can't get enough of Kathy Sheehan, she'll be on Friday. We're playing a repeat of the event we did, the Antiques Appraisal Show with Stair, and Kathy Sheehan was on the panel, and we had a great time this summer. So that'll be on Friday at this time. Meantime, support comes from the Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting Mingling the Waters, 200 Years on the Erie Canal, arkellmuseum.org. Gardner Supply, Hadley, Massachusetts, celebrating the holidays with fresh-cut greens, wreaths, trees, and supplies for the bird lovers, and gift cards for gardeners, gardeners.com. And Rhinebeck Artist Shop, offering fine artist materials and custom picture framing in Rhinebeck and New Paltz, serving the Hudson Valley for over 45 years. HudsonValleyArtistShops.com. Well, that's it. Thanks for the calls. Thanks for the emails. Thanks to Catherine Sheehan for being here. Zach Malloy, our engineer. Ed Rosen screened the calls. Ed, thank you so much. No Vox Pop for the rest of the week. Taking a little Christmas break with the family, wherever you celebrate or don't celebrate. I hope you can share some time with people you love, and I'll see you Monday at 2:00.